Nice. Everybody's here today. I wonder how many people came here this morning with their top down on a convertible? Anybody? Does that sound fun for anybody? Yeah. I think it sounds a little bit fun. Yeah. It's a little bit too cold for that to be happening much this time of year, especially as far north as we are. Would have been a pretty chilly ride. I definitely see less convertibles up here than I do down south. Whenever I'm down Oklahoma, Texas way, they're much more prevalent. Up here, you don't have a whole lot of good time to use it in. I mean, actually, I'm taking that back. There might be more better weather here because it doesn't get quite so hot, but I guess convertible, you can lower the top even whenever it's extremely hot like it is so often down in Texas. But I do see less up here. And those that do have them, it's a novelty. And I know of only really one up here that has one, personally, and that's Marion, with his toy, as he likes to call it. And it's even put up for the winter. He doesn't drive it at all come this time of the year. But convertible means that you change it. You can put the top down, put the top up. That's how it works. Pretty simple. And the thing is, if a car is keeping you warm, if the car is doing its function, if you're not freezing in the bitter cold, why would you want to change it? Why would you want to adjust something so that you are not warm any longer, but rather exposed to all of the cold and the elements? If you're nice and comfy and cozy inside your car, why would you want to not suddenly be comfy and cozy? Kind of that idea of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Convertibles are less practical. They generally just don't last quite as long as other cars because the lining and the top, the way that it secures and fastens down, as far as the ability to keep the weather out, isn't near as long as if the hood is permanently fixed on. They're not quite as stable in driving as if a car that has a top on it, just as a general rule. And yet, even though it's less practical and maybe not wouldn't last quite as long, and maybe even though it's less stable, I still want one. I would still like to have a convertible because on those nice days, I would like nothing more than to be able to take the top down and to be exposed to the sunshine and the wind and all those things. It's not supposed to be practical. It's not supposed to, be the most efficient way of doing things. It's there for the experience, for the exhilarating rush. Although I doubt you would consider it an exhilarating rush to use one today. Again, it'd be more of a taking your life in your own hands and showing up with icicles hanging down from your eyeballs. But its purpose to convert, to change, is there for entertainment, I guess. It's there because we like it. Well, we use that term convert in religion, in churches. Your conversion is the moment at which you became a Christian, the moment at which you changed. You were out of the church, you were outside of Christ, you were outside of the salvation that he offers, and at the moment of conversion, you go inside. You are changed, you become someone who does experience the blessings of salvation, who is a full member of his church, who fully embraces the forgiveness which Christ offers. It's a moment whenever the change happens, going from inside to outside, from lost to saved, from darkness to light. Acts chapter 26, starting in verse 12, Paul is recounting his conversion experience, the moment at which he changed. It's what Doug just read for us. While he was on the road to Damascus, he saw a bright light, and in that bright light, he heard a voice. He fell down. The voice said, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads." He asked, "Who are you, Lord?" The Lord answered, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." Famous account. He actually, we are told whenever it happens in Acts chapter 9, but then he recounts it two more times in the book of Acts. So we have Saul's conversion, Saul, Paul, his conversion story three times in the book of Acts, because it was one of the most significant moments of his life. It's never the change happened. He met Christ on the road to Damascus, and his life was never the same since. But Jesus' instructions to him, starting in verse 16, is what I want to focus on. But get up and stand on your feet. For this purpose I have appeared to you, to appoint you a minister and a witness, not only to the things which you have seen, but also to the things which I will appear to you, rescuing you from the Jewish people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. That word in there, in verse 18, to open their eyes that they may turn from darkness to light, to turn, that's one of the words that they use sometimes and translate convert. To convert, to turn, to face a different direction, to be going in a new direction, to be changed. And in the conversion of Paul, here in verses 16, 17, and 18, the instruction of Jesus is, the reason why I'm doing this, or the purpose behind your conversion, is the conversion of others. That Paul's conversion is directly related to how he would later on bring the gospel and the message of conversion to those who are lost. Because that's his mission. Verse 18, to open their eyes so that they may turn, be converted from darkness to light, and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. He says, your job is to go out, present people with this gospel message of salvation, and thereby they will be changed. They will be converted. They will be different from where they were previously. Previously they were in darkness, now they're in light. Previously they were that without salvation, they're going to have salvation. And that's going to be Paul's job. And as he tells Agrippa in verse 19, he was not disobedient to it. At that moment, after his baptism, well, 3 days later, he started doing it and never looked back. One of the most amazing life stories that we could ever fathom of any missionary, and he was maybe in some ways the first to take the gospel widespread across the Roman Empire. And he did it diligently, and he did it as a great example for anyone else to follow. And so his conversion directly affected his potential to convert others. And that makes sense. What you latch on to, what changes you, you're going to naturally share whenever you're wanting someone else to change. To go from Democrat to Republican, or vice versa. If I was changed from one political party to the next, there would be certain things that might attract me. Stance on taxes, a stance on national debt, a stance on this issue, a stance on that issue. The thing is, whatever issue prompted me to make that switch, if I was talking to someone else wanting them to make that switch, I'd probably bring up that issue. Well, the reason I switched over was because of the view on taxes. Don't you want to switch too? Doesn't that make sense for you? It's the reason I switched. Doesn't that make sense for you? Well, the reason why we are converted will probably be the reason why the reasoning with which we reach out to others, wanting them to share in our conversion as well. The reason why I changed would be the reason I would put forth to someone I was wanting to change and follow that example as well. How you're converted directly affects your potential to convert other people. And what attracts you, what convinced you to be a member of the church, will naturally be what you use to try to convince others. And thereby we kind of make people like us. We convert them the way that we were converted. And that's Paul's goal. It's not necessarily a bad goal, because that's how Paul finishes up his speech. He's speaking before King Agrippa. He's basically on trial. The king is entertaining him, letting him speak. Paul goes in this long, lengthy history of all the things that had happened to him. And in verse 20, start in verse 26. For the king knows about these matters, and I speak to him also with confidence, since I am persuaded that none of these things escape his notice, for this has not been done in a corner. King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do. So here Paul, in his long history of all the things that led him to be in prison and standing before King Agrippa basically on trial, he uses it as a kind of a backhanded way to present to the king the gospel. He says, don't you believe the prophets, King Agrippa? Let's get this conversation started. Don't you believe the Bible? That's where Paul started. He believed the prophets. And then later he was confronted with Christ. So we're seeing if Agrippa believes in the prophets. Kind of testing the waters, maybe. Well, Agrippa's not dense. He knows what Paul is up to. Verse 28, Agrippa replied to Paul, in a short time, you will persuade me to become a Christian? He said, do you think you can make me a Christian just in these 5 minutes here you're speaking to me? Paul's response is perfect. I love verse 29. And Paul said, I wish to God that whether in a short time or long, not only you, but also all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains. Paul's saying, yeah, it's exactly right. It's exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make you like me, except for these chains. Except for the persecution that has come along with it. He's wanting the king to experience the same salvation, the same conversion that he had himself experienced. Paul knew how amazing and great and significant that change was because he experienced it on the road to Damascus. He had had a personal conversion. And so, approaching King Agrippa, he says, I want you to have what I have. I want you to be changed in the way that I was changed. I want you to experience Christ and His salvation the way that I did. And so he's presenting the potential to be converted to the King Agrippa in the same way that he himself was converted. Using his own conversion story, appealing to the things that appeal to him. Kind of leading him down that the logical progression of steps that would take him to being converted. And he's using his own personal experiences to do that. And that's only natural. That's the way it's going to be. If I'm going to talk to you about being converted, I'm going to emphasize the things that caught my attention, that prompted me to make that decision. The forgiveness of sins. The dedication and commitment that coincides with making Jesus your Lord and your King. And the things that I'm going to emphasize are going to be the things that resonate most with me because I can't help but do it that way, hoping that they'll resonate with you as well. That's how evangelism works, how conversion works. But that begs the question, what are we converted to? If I'm going to try to convert others the same way that I was converted, if I'm going to try to use the same points and the same issues and the same logical steps of reason in order to make the argument or make the point to try to get them to make the same decision I did, I better ask, well, what was my decision? What did I commit to? What did I change into? If I was converted and a change occurred, what was that change? Because not everybody's going to like or appreciate the same thing. Not everybody wants a convertible. I do. I really doubt Lisa does. Do you want a convertible, honey? Blow your hair, mess your hair up all the time anywhere you go someplace. The whistling air that you kind of can't help but get. Maybe not so modern cars, but I want an old one. That's what I want. I like an old Mustang convertible. Sorry, Mike. It'd be so nice. I'd enjoy it, you know, so much, but not everybody appeals to that. And I'd point out, you know, the style of it. Well, not everybody likes the style of it. Not everybody thinks it's a beautiful car. Not everybody would agree with me. And so what draws me in might not be what draws someone else in. So you have to ask the question, what drew me in? What was I converted to? Not everyone will appreciate or respond to the same ideas that maybe we responded to. What brings in one person might not bring in the next. And so what are we converted to? Speaking about cars, anybody know what this is? Yeah, there's a hint there. Catalyst. It's a catalytic converter. You're right. It's on your exhaust, for those of you who don't know. It serves a very important function, a modern function. In the early 70s, there was more and more concern about air quality, and so they decided, well, let's make cars more friendly to the environment. So basically what it does is take the poisonous, damaging chemicals that are coming out of your exhaust and makes them not quite so damaging or poisonous. At least that's the theory, that's the intent. And it converts several things. Modern cars have a three-way catalyst that actually converts three different things into three different poisonous chemicals into something much better, water and carbon dioxide. But the main thing it does is it takes carbon monoxide, which is a carbon and an oxygen molecule, and changes it into carbon dioxide. Sticks an extra oxygen on there. Combines carbon monoxide with oxygen, and through the chemical catalyst, this is a chemical conversion, it changes it to carbon dioxide, which is much more friendly to plants and basically to the environment in lots of ways. And that's why it's required by federal law and has been since the early 1970s. So it actually changes, it's a converter. It popped into my head as I was preparing for this sermon because, well, conversion, converter, catalytic converter. It means something has changed. It converts carbon monoxide to carbon dioxide, something much more, far less of a pollutant, far less potential to cause harm to our environment. That's its purpose. It changes the actual chemical composition. What goes out is different from what went in. It's a completely different chemical, a completely different molecule. Other conversions, you take two hydrogens and one oxygen, both particles of air, combine them, what do you get? Water, H2O. Something that is completely different from what you started with. You started with two gases. You end up with a liquid of completely different properties and things that are completely different in every way. It was converted. This converts carbon monoxide to carbon dioxide. Well, we've been converted. We're supposed to have been converted. We're supposed to have been changed. And we're supposed to be completely different than what when it comes out than what went in. So the moment of baptism, you go in. You're supposed to be different when you come out. Well, different how? What are you converted to? You're the same old lump of clay, but there's supposed to be something new inside of you that changes your composition. You still have the same particles within you, but something's added to it to change how they work. To change your condition of your soul. That's the point of conversion. And again, how you've been converted will impact how you'll desire to convert others. How you've been changed will impact how you're trying to get others to change as well. Before, I was myself, a single, self-absorbed organism. My conversion is, I become less, Christ becomes more. I added another piece. It isn't just an addition. As far as, you know, something strapped onto my back, it actually changes my whole character. It changes my whole composition. Just like a chemical reaction, I'm now completely different than I was before. I have a remnant of what was before, but the less of that remnant, the better. What I need is to be filled with the entity, to be filled with Christ. We've gone through the converter. We should be converted. And that converter is Christ. It can be nothing else than Christ, but sometimes we might latch on or might emphasize other things. We think, okay, I've been converted to the Church of Christ. So I've gone through the converter. I went in one side, came out the other. Now that I've come out the other and I'm a member of the Church of Christ, now I like a cappella music. Now I emphasize the Lord's Supper. Now I have the proper understanding of baptism and of congregational autonomy and of the leadership roles within the church. And those become things we emphasize as if that was the change that was supposed to happen. Or maybe now that I've gone through the converter, I have the appropriate understanding of dancing. Or the use of alcohol. Or I really like potlucks now. And I engage in Bible class. Just as Saul was converted, Paul was converted, and then tried to make others like him, we generally do the same thing. We're changed, we're converted, and we try to make others like us, but what were we changed into and what are we trying to change others into? Do we want them to just look like us? Act like us? Have the same mindset as us? Or are we really after something more significant? Another car illustration, the idea of conversion. Whenever I was pretty young, I guess maybe early junior high, my parents bought a conversion van. And we had just the five of us. I had two brothers, so mom, dad, three boys. Before that, we just had a full-size car, which meant that all three boys pretty much got to sit in the back seat together, which meant all-out war. Fighting, wrestling, hitting, punching, pinching, yelling, screaming. So, we didn't have much money, but we needed a new car, and Dad was at the used car lot, and here was this big van. It was old and had problems and some rust and other things. It wasn't all that pretty, but it was a conversion van, and he bought it, and oh, my mom thought she had died and gone to heaven. Because everybody had their own seat. It had bucket seats in the middle, in the front, and then the middle, and then a bench in the back. The bench even laid down and made a bed, and had curtains and a table in the center. And it was older, and so kind of a little bit run down, but we thought it was, you know, amazingly fancy with all the gadgets and gizmos, you know, that were around in the, I guess it would have been the late 80s, early 90s. But that conversion van meant that it had been changed. Because I have a van, and it's not a conversion van. My van, stock from the factory, had 12 seats in it. Whenever, I think Lisa was talking to some dealer somewhere on the phone whenever we were looking to getting in a van and asking, you know, what they had, what was available. And he's like, well, what do you want? You know, a conversion van or a passenger van or a cargo van? And Lisa wasn't quite sure and asked him to explain. He said, well, a cargo van is a box, a passenger van is a box with seats, but a conversion van has all, you know, the stuff that you would really want and enjoy in having in a car. It's been added on after the fact. And we're like, well, all we want is a box with seats, really, and that's what we got, a passenger van. But a conversion van, why it's called a conversion van, because Ford, Chevy, whoever makes it, another company goes in, puts polish on it. Maybe softens the suspension, lowers it, makes it easier to access, takes out the bench seats and puts in nice bucket captain's chairs or so on, and just changes quite a bit of it, putting in more gadgets and gizmos, curtains, whatever. The thing is, it's still a van. You didn't change the content of it. You slapped on a nice coat of paint and made it look nicer and a little bit more enjoyable to sit in and comfy. But you really didn't change its core character. You didn't change what it was. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's all our Christian conversion might be. Take someone, polish them up nice, make them talk right, make them, you know, fit into the Church of Christ mold. But have we really changed who they are? Or, better put, have we allowed Christ to change who they are? Have we put them in contact with the catalyst, with the one who creates and causes change? Or have we simply pushed them through the chamber? To be changed, we have to have Christ. Otherwise, we're still the same old fleshly human beings we were before. We might be able to talk the talk, might be able to impress people, might be able to pass for a Christian in lots of ways and fit in among Christian groups. To have all that Church of Christ jargon and the ability to fit in well. And sometimes I think that's what we want. That's what we're after, rather than someone to truly come to know saving power of Christ Himself. Because earthly conversions have their downsides. Convertible, like I've said, you don't always want the top down. And there are other side effects to having a convertible. Worthwhile for people that enjoy them. But you lose certain things whenever you have a convertible rather than a regular car. It's a trade-off. The catalytic converter, for all the good that hopefully it's done for our environment, you don't get as good a gas mileage. It wastes horsepower because it restricts the flow of your exhaust, thereby making your engine work harder to do the same job it would do otherwise without it. So we're having to put more gas in our vehicles and have less horsepower in order to power those vehicles, at the same time limiting what comes out of the exhaust. Well, and even a conversion van. Sure, it looks a whole lot nicer, but if you needed to put equipment and tools in it, it wouldn't fit near as well as your traditional plain old cargo van. It's a trade-off. What do you want more? What do you want less? And that's how we present the conversion of people's souls. Well, do you want that forgiveness? Do you want all these nice things? Do you want to enable to do the Lord's Supper the right way? Do you want to be able to worship the a cappella music the way that we do? Do you want to, in order to understand baptism in this way? And we present all these extras. But are we converted to Christ? I'll ask this question. Were you converted to the Church of Christ? If the answer is yes, that's not the right answer. You're not supposed to be converted to the Church of Christ. Because I'm the Church of Christ. We are the Church of Christ. If you're converted to the Church of Christ, you're converted to people. You're converted to people like me. And that's not a good enough conversion. Or maybe you're converted to doctrine or other matters. The only thing we're supposed to be converted to is Christ Himself. I go into the chamber not wanting to come out looking like all the other Christians I know. I should go into the chamber, go down into that water, die to myself so that I come out looking like Christ Himself. Nothing short of that. Christ impacting me, working in me, the Holy Spirit within me, changing me so that more and more I'm made into the image of Christ. That's the goal. We are members of, when we are converted to Christ, we become partakers and members of His church inherently, because that's how He's changed us. We become changed like all those others who have been changed to be like Him. But the conversion is not to the church. The conversion is not to any particular doctrine or standing or position. The conversion has to be to the person. And that was Paul's experience. Jesus came in that flash of blinding light. Paul fell down to his knees. Jesus said, "It's hard for you to kick against the goads. Why do you persecute me?" Saul could have said a lot of things. First he said, "Who are you, Lord?" "I'm Jesus whom you are persecuting." At that point, Paul could have said a whole lot more. He could have said, "Well, I need you to clear up this issue for me, Lord. I don't quite understand this issue. I need you to tell me how this is supposed to work. I don't understand how Jews and Gentiles are supposed to associate. Tell me how, before I'll go your route, explain to me how the new covenant matches up with the old covenant. Explain to me how I'm supposed to be at ease with the old law and understand how your word takes its place." There's lots of issues that Paul had. Obviously, he was a persecutor of the church. He hated the church. He was threatened by the church. He had tons of issues and tons of questions that he needed cleared up. And Jesus could have sat there and explained it to him and converted him to all these answers. But that wasn't the case. All those answers came. All those positions and doctrines came. And maybe it took some time. I don't know how much. We're not told all the specifics of Paul's inner working of his mindset and how the Spirit came onto him and in what ways and what the process of his maturity was. No, it was rapid. But on the road to Damascus, which he cites as his conversion point, the moment of his change, I don't think it was separate from his baptism, which came a few days later at the hands of Ananias. I think they went together and were supposed to. But at that moment of change, he simply said, without words necessarily, but okay. You're the one in charge. You are Lord. I'm yours. That was his conversion. He was converted to Christ. Not to what Christ explained, not to all the answers that Christ gave, not to all the positions and the new potential that he thought he might have as a Christian leader. None of that was his conversion. He wasn't changed for any of that. He was changed because he beheld and interacted with Christ himself. Next several weeks, we're going to be looking at what we're converted to. I'm going to bring up more of those issues and doctrines and traditions and things that we hold on to, making sure that they are not our focal point, that they are not what we're after whenever we want to bring about change in ourselves and change in others, a conversion. But for now, I want to leave you with this. Turn over to the book of John. Book of John, chapter 20. Verses 30 and 31. Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John says, I could have written a lot more, but I wrote what I wrote because I wanted you to be converted. I wanted you to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that by believing you may have life in his name, be changed, go from death to life. That's the point of the book. That's what he's after. He wants what he writes to create in us the belief that's essential for conversion. Now turn back to John chapter 4. John chapter 4, Jesus and the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. At the well, talks about living water. They have that interaction, and she's amazed because he tells her how many men she's been with. And she goes back and tells everybody in town, hey, this is a prophet. This is a prophet who can, you know, tell me everything that I've ever done. And the people are interested and intrigued, and they come out to hear what Jesus has to say. And it says in verse 40, so when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they were asking him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. Many more believed because of his word. And they were saying to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world. At first, they just were intrigued or believed because of what the woman said. The woman said that, you know, this was an amazing man who could tell her all the things she'd ever done in her life, was truly a prophet with a message and of the kingdom and a message from God, and said that he was the Messiah. So she got them excited. But their true conversion didn't come until they beheld Christ themselves. And that's what John is after, and he tells us he's after in chapter 20. And he says, I'm writing these things to you so that you can come into contact with Christ himself, with the catalyst. not physically, but through knowledge of His life and through His Spirit, which will come upon you if you so choose. If you accept it, if you desire it, if you reach out for it, it's reaching out for you to be converted by Christ Himself, to Christ Himself. No other change is good enough. Not dressing up on a Sunday morning with a tie, or any other change that might make you fit in better or worse, you know, with this particular group of believers. The reason why we're here as a group of believers, hopefully, is we've all been changed by Christ. First and foremost, that's our conversion. We are no longer what we were, and through the chamber, through the water, and the spiritual cleansing of our consciences, appealing to God for forgiveness, have received it, and therefore received His Spirit and the power to start changing our lives. That's the thing. You don't have to be changed before. You don't have to be changed before you get baptism, because baptism is the change. You don't have to get it all right beforehand. And you're not even required to start changing yourself. You don't tell the exhaust system and the exhaust coming out of the engine, "Okay, I want you to change from carbon monoxide to carbon dioxide. Get to work." It's powerless to do so. It's made up of the molecules it's made up of, and it doesn't have the ability or potential to change itself, and neither do we. What you do is you put in the catalyst that works upon it. And that's all, and that's what's involved with our conversion. I'm not saying start changing yourself to make yourself more like Christ. Just get close to Christ and let Him do the work. Stay close to Him. Join yourself up with Him. Stay connected with Him. And He'll do the changing. Just make yourself one with Him. And that's the invitation we offer this morning. To be changed, to be converted, to move out of darkness into light, move out of death into life. Life eternal, which is available only whenever we come into the presence of Christ Himself and allow Him to be our Lord and our Master, our King and our Savior. And if you need that this morning, won't you come as we stand and sing?